I'd like to call you back to attention, please. And again, thank you for coming out. We're delighted that there's been a good turnout. And remind you that we meet every Thursday at noon here to raise with the people in Lethbridge some of the current issues that affect our public life. The topic for next week will be an address by Cosmos Foutsinios on the subject making the most of Alberta oil sands. So you're invited to come for that if you're able to do so. If you check our website, www.sacpaw.ca, you will be able to see upcoming programs, and you will be able to hear on audio if you go through the right link to be able to respond, also and make some comments on sessions if you're willing to do so. From time to time, we have expenses in the council, and that's why we sell memberships. They're $25, and Diane Pointner's at the table just outside the door, and that helps us to rent a public address system that we hope will be effective for you. If you are not on our mailing list, we'd like to have you on it, and you can get communications from us in two ways. One is by email, and the other is by post. So again, if you don't get that and you'd like to, please speak to Diane Pointner as you leave today. Those of you who want to ask our guest speaker now to answer a question, you can come straight down the center here, please, and come to the microphone at the front. Don't try to go down that way. There are too many obstacles. Okay? There's too many chairs. Okay. And when you come, the first thing to do is to state your name. If you're going to make some comments, please keep them brief. We have one speaker today, and we would like you to limit yourself to one question. The subject for today is Alberta's leadership role in Confederation, and I'll invite Preston to come up in a moment, but I do want to acknowledge that we have two MLAs present, Clint Unford and Bridget Pasteur. We're pleased to have you people come. We value when you come to our council and speak. Oh, sorry, I didn't realize that. I apologize, Paul. I didn't mean to overlook that. Thank you. Rick Casson's wife is here today and others from the office, and we know where Rick is, so we won't. So we're pleased to have that representation, too. It's really quite nice also to have Ingrid and Ray here. Thank you for coming. You've been here quite often to public affairs, and we're quite sure you'll be back. Thank you. Now, Preston, please come, and we invite people to come forward to the microphone at the front and answer questions. Okay. Don't all come at once. Ray and I always say that in question periods, that unlike the question period in the House of Commons, answers will be given to the questions.
My name is Cheryl Bradley, and I was interested to see one of your main questions is, can you marry conservation in the energy sector in terms of balancing the ecological budget? Now, we currently have a government in Alberta that feels planning is interventionist. And yet I don't know how we can marry those two without some form of dialogue and planning. So I'd like your views on this.
Okay, well, that's, as I go around the province, I find almost more interest in this subject than anyone else. And in response to your question, certainly there's a role for planning in achieving this balance, but I don't think planning is enough. I think ultimately we have to harness the marketplace itself to addressing environmental problems. The economists will tell you that a market doesn't care what the demand is. A market's basically a mechanism for bringing supply to meet demand using pricing signals. If the demand is for more oil or wheat or cars, it'll bring supply to meet that demand. But if the demand is for cleaner air or clean water or reclaimed land or better forests, market mechanisms can be used to do that. The key to using market mechanisms to address environmental questions, for example, water, is to start pricing the resource at an appropriate price and sending signals to the consumer that when you use this product, in this case, water, there's a cost attached to it. It isn't free, even though we now treat it as if it was. So I agree with your point that there's a place for government planning in conserving the environment, but I think the even more important question for Albertans is how to harness market mechanisms to conserve our water, to clean our air, to conserve our forests as well. A balance between the two. See, I'm going to talk about this a little bit more in High River on the next Tuesday. And well, actually, there'll be a copy of that talk. It'll be on our website, themanningcenter.ca. You might take a look at it. I'll list about five mechanisms besides government planning for doing that. But thank you for asking that. You'll pry my next talk out of me if I don't be careful.
Thank you for coming, Mr. Manning. I've got a question I'd like you to think about, or maybe you can shed some light on. It concerns me quite a lot. 1 month ago, there was a meeting in Banff of what calls itself the North American Competitiveness Council, or perhaps Corporate Council. This entity came into existence, I think, June of this year. It seems to have the ear of all of the three governing structures in North America, in NAFTA. It seems to be troublesome to me, and I think a lot of people, we wonder now, is government taking its mandate from the corporations and not from the people? Because when an entity like that starts having that kind of influence, it's quite frightening, actually. I'd like you to comment on what you know about that entity and what you think about it, please.
Well, I'm not familiar with that particular entity. I think on your basic premise, it's extremely important that governments take their ultimate direction from the public. And one of the issues Alberta's got to deal with is this whole democratic reform thing. How do you actually get more accountability and interaction between the government and rank and file of citizens? I think that is an area that's declined somewhat in Alberta the last number of years and has to be addressed. I personally am not that concerned about, there's a variety of corporate and business councils dealing with how to make yourself more competitive in a free trade world. Like, that is a subject that we have to address, because as a trading nation, our standard of living, increasingly our income, and increasingly a large number of our jobs are dependent on being competitive. So I don't personally have an alarm with the fact that there's councils and think tanks and groups dealing with that question. I'd like to see that input balanced with input from the public and the broader public. But I'm not alarmed, I guess I'm saying, by those types of organizations, as long as you have democratic accountability on the part of the governments involved. Okay.
Ed Bardock, you mentioned small Westerner, big Westerner. Mm-hmm. The East has always managed to gather, solidify, to keep the West quiet. Do you foresee, from your experience with your institutes, that we will ever get the West to band together, BC, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, with a common interest of making the West heard, instead of, like you said, Alberta fight Ottawa? Can you see a balance there?
Well, I can see the West growing in influence by working together if our leadership addresses that and makes it an objective. On paper, the West is growing stronger and stronger every day. We account for a third of the population of the country. We account for 50% of the exports of the country. If you add in some of the big, raw northern seats in Ontario, which hate Toronto, and add them to the western seats, you actually got a third, almost a third of the seats in the parliament are occupied by our part of the country. I think the West is, this is not the impotent West at the turn of the last century, when we had less than 5% of the GDP, less than 5% of the seats in the parliament. But the question is whether we will work together on common interests. I do think this mechanism of these memorandums of understanding between Western provinces themselves, where they